Hi there, and welcome to Season 2 of York Talks, a podcast for families wanting to learn more about how the York School, Toronto's leading co-ed independent school delivering the IB curriculum from JK to grade 12, views education. I'm your host, Natasha Esty. This season, join me in conversation with teachers from the junior, middle, and senior schools about their craft and get insights into some of the most progressive approaches to education today. Last episode, we learned about how teachers inspire the hearts and minds of our youngest learners. The junior years of elementary school, grades 3 to 5, are about continuing to build a strong foundation and consolidating some of the skills, both academic and life, students will need as they look ahead to middle school. Amazing things happen at the York School during these years, such as the introduction of competitive sports, one-to-one Chromebook access, and the PYP exhibition, a celebration of each student's achievement, acknowledging their transition from the primary school years to the middle school years. Teachers Barb Prevedello and Suzanne Newell have played a key role in helping students develop strong skills, knowledge, and understanding in literacy, numeracy, critical thinking, research, problem solving, communication, and the arts, as well as encouraging them to become independent learners who are aware of their own strengths and talents. Barb Prevedello has been at York for almost 18 years. She is teaching grade 5 this year. Barb is a highly engaged member of her community as a volunteer and board member and an avid outdoors woman. Suzanne Newell has been at York for 10 years after teaching overseas in countries like New Zealand, England, Hungary, Qatar, and Chile. She's an alum of Cohort 21, which Justin Medved and I spoke about in Episode 1. She is teaching Grade 4 this year. Suzanne is known for her innovative and engaging approach to teaching math. Barb, Suzanne, welcome. Thank you for speaking with me today.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, thank you, Natasha.
As I will with all my conversations this season, to begin, I would love to hear about both your journeys to being teachers, and IB teachers in particular, and what makes teaching the junior grades, so grades 3, 4, 5, your sweet spot, so to speak.
I can start. I was a camp counselor, or I went to camp as a camper forever, and then I was a camp counselor, and everyone said, oh my gosh, you should be a teacher because you love camp so much. And I actually avoided being a teacher because I didn't want to have to discipline in the classroom. So I kept away from teaching for many years and then decided in my 30s that I would go into teaching because that everything came back to being a teacher. And so I did my teacher's college program away in Scotland, in Glasgow, and then came back and started supply working at the York School and decided to become a full-time employee at the York School. My career at the junior school has been grades 2, 3, 4, and 5. And while I really enjoyed teaching grade 2 when I first started at the York School, I have really felt my energy flourish towards the grade 5s. And I think having them be the oldest within the junior school, excited for them to move on to the middle school, I get to have them as leaders of the school. And just trying to instill those leadership skills to further develop when they get to the middle and senior school has been something that I've really enjoyed.
That's great. Thanks, Barb. And Suzanne, what about you? I'd love to hear about your journey to teaching and how that all played out for you.
So I guess for me, I always knew that I wanted to be a teacher. And so when I went to university, it was all about getting to teacher's college. But unfortunately, when I graduated, there were no jobs. And so I ended up going overseas to get some experience and then come back and teach in Canada. Well, I started off with a 6-month contract in New Zealand and ended up being away for 12 years in 5 different continents. Wow. So it was pretty exciting. I think that experience internationally drew me to the IB program. And because I wanted to share my understanding of different cultures and different countries. And in terms of IB, having some experience with that abroad, I just really love the inquiry-based nature of the program. And I liked that the program focuses on more so the process and the skills as opposed to the content. So the kids are working with information. They're not memorizing. They're doing problem solving. And I also really love that the IB encourages children to take action. And that's something that we're always striving to encourage our children to do within our grades.
Absolutely. Yeah, we were talking about that a little bit in our conversation in the last episode. This idea of the action piece is really big in IB.
Yeah.
Again, I want to throw this out at both of you and whoever would like to start, but I'm really curious to know who or what inspires you in your work.
I'll go first this time, Barb. You mentioned earlier that I like to teach math, and that is indeed the case. I think part of the reason why is because when I was younger, I felt like I wasn't a math person. And I started to follow and learn about this woman whose name is Jo Bowler, who works at Stanford University. And she talks about having a mathematical mindset, which is based on the work of Carol Dweck.
Yes.
About mindset. And she goes on to say that everyone can be a math person. There's no such thing as being a math person. You either have it or you don't. That just doesn't exist. That everyone can learn math to high levels. And for me, that's a really important message for our students to have, especially in math, but also in any other subject. And so Jo Bowler really inspires me. And the school paid for me to go and see Jo Bowler at Stanford 3 years ago.
Wow.
So I was fortunate enough to see her in person, and that just further inspired me more.
Yeah. And maybe we'll get into this a little bit later, but my sense is that the focus of some of the work you were doing as part of the Cohort 21 experience was looking at sort of math mindset stuff, if I'm not mistaken.
That's correct. So My project was to gather some information about the mindset of math across the entire school, right from kindergarten to grade 12. And I was able to see that, you know, there were some trends that students didn't always have a positive attitude about themselves in terms of math. And it provided a springboard for what we can do for our students to ensure that they do have a positive attitude and want to keep going with math beyond the junior grades.
For sure. Thanks, Suzanne. That's so interesting. And Barb, what about you? Who or what inspires you in your work?
I'd like to just add with the Jo Bowler inspiration, one of my favorite parts of her philosophy is, I just don't know this yet. And that YET word is so important. And we've already tried to instill it in the classroom. And I think through grade four and having Suzanne as a teacher and the grade four team have done a really good job of my students in grade five now saying, I just don't know how to do this yet, and having this growth mindset. To further that, I think the inspiration comes from my students and what they're willing to learn, the excitement for the learning that's going on, whether it's math or looking at the exhibition, which we look more closely at in grade five as the culminative program in PYP to graduate from that program. The exhibition is such a great project for the students, and I'm always inspired with how excited they are to find their own research project and to be able to find their own avenue and their way of researching and their way of learning. They just inspire greatness and creativity all around with the exhibition. So I would say the students and my colleagues around me inspire me, because people come from all walks of life and all different schools and international schools, and they bring new ideas and new programs. And I know I've been here for 18 years, and it is always good for me to be able to be inspired by other teachers that come from a different school to have different ways of teaching, learning, and being creative. So even within the walls of the school, there's lots of inspiration.
Absolutely.
And I'd like to add that Barb also does her share of inspiring other teachers as well. So it doesn't go one way.
And it's actually a great kind of segue into what I wanted to get into next. And this is really wanted to get a better sense of how each of you would sort of describe your approach to teaching. How would you describe your approach? And maybe you've seen it kind of evolve over time too.
For me, I think it's about the most important part is engaging your students. You have to make it fun. You have to get them invested in whatever you're teaching them, because if you don't hook them, it's not going to be engaging. So that's first. Secondly, I think it's important to provide engagements that involve real life problems and for them to see some value in whatever they're working on within the classroom. And finally, I think it's important for me to share with them that they should believe in themselves and they can do whatever they set their minds to. I believe that that positive mindset will take them a long way. And it's something that we talk a lot about in the class.
Yeah, big time. Barb, how about you?
I look at it through also the lens of the PYP approaches to learning and, you know, through communication skills, through research skills, through social skills. It's really important to make sure that the students have all of these skills to be able to go forward. So my approach to teaching sort of lends itself to the approaches to learning in that making it collaborative, making it engaging, making it so that they're able to be the teachers and guide themselves through the learning process as well to each other. So I want them to be able to learn from each other and be able to communicate with each other and be able to teach each other. So I try to instill that in the classroom.
So if I could have been a fly on the wall in your classroom today, what would I have seen or heard or experienced? And Suzanne, I would like to get you to think about that same question as well.
Well, today, if you were a fly on the wall, you would have seen a lot of big numbers because we're looking at place value. And in order to teach the place value, we did a lot of investigating and exploring using playing cards and writing on the board about what a big number looks like and just the inquiry-based learning as opposed to, I will be using textbooks and stuff like that. But today was a lot about investigating through manipulative tools. I think Suzanne and I would both agree that, especially in math, manipulative tools is the only way to go.
And absolutely.
It makes it fun. It makes it engaging. And you can engage all types of learners when you're using tools in the classroom. So that would be my number one approach, is making sure that it's engaging, using tools to help guide the learning. Mm.
So in my classroom today, we were doing some collaborative discussion about what makes a healthy media choice.
Oh.
And so we were talking about what types of media there are and what sorts of things they do and whether or not it's healthy or not healthy. And so for some of the things, there was one about playing video games for 6 hours on a Saturday. They had to place themselves on a spectrum from really healthy to really unhealthy. And then they had to justify their reason. So as much as possible, I find that the York School tries to ensure that the students are moving around within their classroom and not just sitting at their desks. And so another thing that you would notice today is that some children are sat at their spot at their desk. Some are sitting on some wiggly stools. Some are sitting on some red chairs that sit on the floor that allow them to stretch a little bit more. Mm. And I think it's important. I think the York School is really, really good at this, is ensuring that students are learning in the best way for them. Mm-hmm. So that's something you would see. And I think the other thing that I find really important that happens a lot in the classroom is just getting and receiving feedback. it's really evident in the research how important feedback is to get it from your peers and from your teacher in a really timely way. And we do a lot of that in the classroom day to day.
Absolutely. And one of the things that I know it might not have been today, but recently, Suzanne, you posted a series of photographs sort of looking at how your students were developing sort of their class sort of contract or the class agreement. Maybe you could speak to that just briefly and how that worked in your classroom.
Sure. Well, the school has invested a lot of time and money into a program called RULER. And it's a program based out of Yale that focuses on social emotional learning. And one of the tenets of this program is to create a class charter. Now, often in the past, teachers would create a set of rules that the students should follow in the classroom. It's co-created. But the thing with the RULER program is they call it a class charter. And what it is the students list the emotions or the feelings that they want to feel in class. So my kids chose, I'm just looking here, equal, confident, joyful, lively, welcome, calm, motivated, and optimistic. And then once we decided on those eight feelings, then we had to figure out, well, how are we going to feel those feelings? What are we going to do to ensure that all of us are feeling welcome or all of us are feeling calm? And so then we listed some ideas for that. And so this is the first time that I've done it, and I've really enjoyed building the classroom community in that way through a charter.
The beauty of the charter is you can use it for anything. Like if they're having troubles at recess time, you can bring up a recess charter. If we're having even looking smaller at a math class, we're just not all able to be engaged in the math class, you could use a charter for a specific topic or what have you. So I really like the charter as well in that respect, as you can use it across the board in the whole classroom.
I love that idea, Barb, using it for different subjects or on the playground. I think that's fantastic.
Because bringing out those emotions is so important, and that's what we're focusing on in this 21st century learning, is let's stem from the emotions and work backwards from there to figure out how we're going to feel those emotions and get in on that. So that's
so interesting. Mm-hmm. I'm also curious about whether, I mean, obviously we talk about sort of parents as partners in their children's learning journeys, and whether this idea of sort of creating, you know, home charters as well, and maybe looking at, you know, how do we want to feel at home, and almost using some of that same sort of language and approach could be interesting too. Mm-hmm. I bet you that we already have some parents that do that.
I think that's the goal, is to like focus on the staff and the students now, and then to extend beyond the classroom into the homes, so that we're using the same sort of language at home as we are at school.
Now, Barb, you touched on something like an interesting point, because this also came up in the last conversation I had in episode number 2, and that was around this focus on emotions is really very much like this wasn't happening even like 7 years ago, you know, certainly not 10 years ago. So what does it mean to each of you to like, you know, to be a 21st century educator, and what are some of the things that includes that are maybe newer now than even they were back when we changed into this 21st century, so to speak?
Well, to further the RULER program, there's the charter part of it. And then we've also moved into, there's four sections of the RULER program. And the second section is looking at the mood meter. And that, again, is with a lot of work of Amy Faba, our SEL teacher. She, our guidance counselor, she has instilled this great emotional program into everybody's classroom, which we're continuing as our homeroom teachers and specialist teachers to involve ourselves in this mood meter program, where we're feeling our emotions. You can have a high energy, and it can graph high energy with pleasantness, or low energy and not pleasant, or a combination of those two, with the different four different colors of red, blue, green, and yellow to identify these emotions. And within those colors are certain buzzwords to go with those colors and emotions. And the students are engaging themselves, whereas A, 7 years ago, as you said, and B, when we were growing up, we never touched on emotions within our school classrooms. So mm-hmm. I think this is really helping students engage themselves in relationships in with their teachers, with their friends, and be able to check in with themselves. So they're checking in with the charter, they're checking in with the mood meter, checking in with their learning style, checking in with how they best learn and what is best for them. So they're being advocates for themselves. And I think that's really important in the 21st century, being advocates for their own learning. It's not something that we were taught, I don't think. So mm-mm. It's nice to see them learning about this. Further that with the morning mindful moments engages our students and lets them be more appreciative of how they're feeling in the day.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's great. Suzanne?
And I think because we've gone through such a tumultuous time with COVID and the kids have been here and not, their social development is not what it would have been had we been in school all the time. And so I think understanding their emotions and having that ability to label their emotions is going to be helpful, not only in school, but also in all of their lives.
Mm-hmm. It is different these days, and it's in a good way.
And it feels different for us as teachers too, because we're also involved in, you know, having mindful moments and engaging in the mood meter as well. So it makes, you know, it's really good to have us check in too. So I appreciate that part. I like it.
Mm-hmm. Well, I loved how, I don't know if it was last Halloween or maybe the one before, but a bunch of the teachers got together and everyone wore a different color, you know, t-shirt from the mood meter with like the label of the different emotions on it.
Right.
Yeah. So it's just really, it's something that I think has been really embraced, certainly school-wide. And the great news is I'm actually going to be talking to Amy Faba next episode. So I'm going to talk to her in a lot more detail about RULER and SC, you know, social emotional learning at the junior school. So it's wonderful kind of.
So we should zip it because we'll give it all away.
Oh no. But it's really, really interesting to get a sense of how it plays out in your classrooms, right? Because, and obviously it's going to be, different ways it plays out in different parts of the school. We've talked a little bit about what it's like to be in your classroom, some of the things that are going on, your approaches to teaching, but I'd also love to hear some examples that maybe you could share about, innovation in your teaching and especially how you might approach, teaching numeracy and literacy and social emotional learning. You talked about manipulatives used a lot in math. It's like an absolute must, but any other examples you might like to share?
I think... What's really special about the York School is that when we teach something, it's not really teaching, it's facilitating learning. And so we're always pulling things apart and sort of seeing how they work, just like you would with, I don't know, a toy car or something. So, for example, we're learning about how to write a recount. So it's not us on the stage telling the students what to do. It's us showing them an example of a recount and pulling it apart and seeing what the features are. And so that might not sound terribly innovative, but it does allow the students to actually figure out for themselves and problem solve what a recount is. And I think that's a really critical skill going forward to allow them to be more independent. And for me, that's something that we're really good at doing at the York School.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, teachers as learners as well.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
I was going to add to that the collaboration piece. Again, if I look back on my primary school years, you know, it might have been desks in a row. And I mean, besides COVID having plexiglass in the middle of our tables, we generally have these round tables where we're collaborating with each other at all times. So the classroom looks like we're giving them a task to work together to problem solve. And I think problem solving is the way that of the future to make every child and person successful in career is to be able to problem solve and problem solve with people. So we're not necessarily an island on our own and trying to complete a task on our own. We really want to engage the students in working together to solve these problems. And like Suzanne said, taking a big concept and breaking it down into little pieces for them to figure out how to put that pieces, those pieces back together, I think is important. We're doing paragraph writing the same way that you were doing your writing, is picking apart paragraphs, what's important in them, what do you notice about all of these, what is similar, what is different, and then piecing together your own paragraph yourself and trying to write a paragraph on your own. The other piece I was going to say is in math, we are focusing our unit on the government, but in math, we're doing a lot of inquiry-based math with numbers and big numbers with the election. Mm-hmm. So we're combining our government unit in the election with these big numbers of who's voted where and how many people have voted in Canada, 1867 compared to 2021, and pulling apart all those pieces to make sense of place value and bigger numbers. So I think York School does do a really good job, or the teachers are doing a great job of trying to get that inquiry-based learning really active in the kids.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's also in the world, right? Like it's that mm-hmm. sense of it being like truly in the world. It's not this sort of abstract. It's like, we're actually looking at a real thing that's really happening right now and applying, mm-hmm. you know, that other part to it.
The other thing I think that is really important to mention is the fact that the York School does such a great job at technology. Mm-hmm. We have the latest technology in our classrooms, the Chromebooks, headphones, iPads, interactive whiteboards, lots of different things. And the administration does a really good job of making sure that we've got the professional development to allow us to use those in the best way possible in our classrooms, while not overbalancing it with always technology, but knowing when to use technology to enhance learning the most. And mm-hmm. I think that's something that we do really well.
I agree.
I agree too. And I was going to say, if we weren't on top of it prior to COVID,
yeah,
we are definitely on top of it after COVID. And
that's true.
We all remember how uncomfortable we felt March 2020 when we had to go online and figure out Google Meets or whatever. And now it's like secondhand nature. And it's amazing how upskilled we've been, but the support we've had to be upskilled, you know, mm-hmm. talking to different schools, they were, you know, the teachers were on their own to figure things out. And we have been, I think the York School has been so fortunate, or the people in the York School have been so fortunate to have such a great tech team to get us where we are and be comfortable with mm-hmm. technology in general.
Well, and also that, you know, a lot of, you know, we think about members of that learning innovation technology team are in many ways teachers first themselves. You know, Justin Medved, Afsel Sheikh, I mean, they're mm-hmm. teachers first as well. So it's coming, you know, coming at it almost from that kind of mindset.
Lens.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, or that lens. You mentioned the sort of move to virtual learning, the, you know, the teaching during a pandemic and how, it, you know, you had to upskill very quickly and rapidly in that context. And I know it was actually a pretty challenging time for teachers on many different levels. Certainly need to acknowledge that. But there are some silver linings, too, that have come out of this time. And I'm curious to know, what are some silver linings that you have each discovered or experienced as a teacher over the past year and a half?
Well, I think one of the silver linings is that the dedication of the staff to make the learning engaging, regardless of the forum, was pretty outstanding. I know from just hearing about the things that the other teachers have done during their online teaching, it was first rate. Teachers worked really hard to ensure that their kids stayed engaged and did so right until the last possible day. And so that is the silver lining. And we can see that as the children come up to us this year, there aren't any gaps in their learning. Mm-hmm. They're right where they're supposed to be. that shows a lot of commitment to ensuring their students didn't fall through the cracks with mm-hmm. the online learning platform.
I would say the silver lining is teachers and students' resilience to mm-hmm. the situation. And we've had to, I don't want to use the word pivot, but everybody's had to rearrange their lives and their way of thinking and their way of learning and their way of communicating. And the resilience for the little kids, even the JKs and SKs, of being able to function all day online, to a grade 5, a grade 4, being able to function online. My heart goes out to these kids. They're going to remember this experience. We're going to remember this experience, but they're going to be at university or in their jobs and think, I was learning online. And who knows what that's going to look like in the future? Like, is that the new way for some people in the future? Who knows? But I definitely think there's few silver linings, but resilience is one. I just am so hopeful that we will remain in the classroom, because we just have to be.
mm-hmm. No, for sure. For sure. When you think about the future of primary years, or, you know, the junior sort of years education, what really excites you when you look to the future? And again, we don't have crystal balls, but
that's a good question. I'm really interested in brain research and how current brain research influences the way we teach. One of the things that Joel Bowler talks about is how the brain is actually, it's got a plasticity, so it can grow, it can get stronger. And so for me, I think something that's really exciting is to know how that research is going to play out in the classroom for both teachers and for students, because I think it's really powerful and it will change the way that we teach. So I'm excited about that.
I think the future is in our students and what they can create and innovate. I don't want to say gone are the days where we go and find a job, but this is their opportunity for the future, which is, you know, website research and building or creating new ideas. We have given these students an opportunity to be creative and innovative and problem solve. And that's where I think our future is. And that's where I think the future of primary education is, in order to set them up for success in the middle and senior school and jobs in the future.
I want to thank you both so much for sharing your thoughts and experiences as teachers and as human beings, as we all are today. You are definitely helping our junior school students build strong foundations for the future.
Well, thanks for having us, Natasha.
Thank you, Natasha, and have a great night.
Thanks.
Bye.
I don't know about you, but I am finding these conversations so inspiring, and I always learn something new about how our teachers approach education. I enjoyed learning about the work of Joe Bowler and Carol Dweck and the idea of math mindset. I will include a link to Joe and Carol's work in the show notes. I also love the power of yet concept. Barb and Suzanne talked about how they engage their students through problem solving, and they shared ways that they ensure their students are able to learn in the best way for them, and how to be advocates for their own learning. You can learn more about academics at the junior school by visiting our website. You can find Suzanne on Twitter at SuzNewellTeach and Barb at BarbPrevadello. Follow the hashtag YorkLearns to see education in action at the York School. Visit York Talks online at www.yorkschool.com/YorkTalks. Subscribe to York Talks where you get your podcasts, and tell other families wanting to learn more about how the York School approaches education. I'm your host, Natasha Esty. I hope you enjoyed the conversation today. Please join us again for more York Talks.